Welcome to ADHD Crash Course. Today we have Alita Storch. She is an anti-diet dietitian. She's a therapist, a certified body trust provider, and she specializes in working with folks who have disordered eating, history of dieting, autoimmune conditions, and or ADHD. So she's our kind of person, and I'm really excited to have her here. She's going to be talking to us about the connection between ADHD and eating disorders, which is just a really important topic, in my opinion, and I'm so stoked to have her on. Welcome, Alita.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm really glad you're here. And I gotta say, Alita dealt with a lot of bumps on my end, some ADHD moments, so I appreciate her. And before she even got on here, I put her through a little bit, so I appreciate it.
And I totally get it.
That was so kind. She was like, oh, no, I'm dropping balls too. I'm like, are you though? Tell us a little bit about this topic. I'm all ears. I can't wait to hear what you have to share.
Yeah. So I guess we can start with talking a little bit about how I got to working with eating disorders and ADHD. As a kid, I definitely like exhibited traits of ADHD. The diagnosis was kind of thrown around, but it was never really like formally given. And my parents were pretty resistant to the idea of medication or, excuse me, or a formal diagnosis, which made sense, right? Like it was the early 90s and my parents were hippies.
Yeah.
So I'd never really like got a lot of the skills or really understood like why I was the way that I was. I was very hyperactive. I was always getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. I definitely like struggled in school, but kind of just like eked by. I did enough to get by. And I was actually placed in the gifted program because I was like so bored in classes. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where ADHD kind of started in my life. And then I ended up getting a diagnosis in grad school, which connects with like how I kind of discovered ADHD and the connection with food. So growing up, I just always really struggled with eating. I would never remember to eat. I would forget my lunch on the kitchen counter and go to school without it.
Yes.
So I was kind of perpetually undernourished as a child. And then when I went to college, I didn't really have my parents around to remind me to eat or to put food in front of me. And the cafeteria at school was kind of like a free-for-all buffet. I was like, okay, I'm not going to eat all day. And then I'm just going to like pack it all in at the end of the day. Yes. Because I don't have.
It really is a common experience, I think, for a lot of us. Yeah. College is a time that's like, you haven't really dealt with food as an adult, mm-hmm. as a preparer of food, a lot of us.
Yes. And we're not taught that, right? Like, I mean, there's like home ec. I don't even know if they do home ec anymore.
Do they? I took it, but I don't think they do it. I made a pig pillow. I'm very proud of my pig pillow.
Totally. Confusing. Yeah, baking cookies, right? But those things don't translate. So college was just a lot anyway. School felt a lot harder than I had anticipated. And it was also really the first exposure that I had to diet culture.
Which is kind of exceptional and cool.
I feel incredibly lucky. Obviously I was exposed to fat phobia and diet culture kind of peripherally, but there was no dieting within my household. My parents really raised us to be like as intuitive eaters as possible, given the limitations of ADHD. None of my friends were really obsessed with food or their bodies. And I was an athlete in high school. And so I was always just trying to like get enough food in.
Right. You need to fuel yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. It was sort of like stop at the gas station, get a bunch of food before practice and then eat dinner after practice.
Yes.
So I loved food and definitely felt really comfortable with it. I felt reasonably comfortable with my body, obviously felt like awkward as a teenager, which is normal. But I lived in an athlete dorm and there was a lot of disordered eating that was showing up. That was sort of my first experience of being like, oh, like, am I supposed to care about this? Am I supposed to control my body?
But that's interesting to me, being somebody who did not live in the athlete dorm. Like, you think of athletics being people that are feeling their body and that are like intentional about eating for energy, but that wasn't true.
No, not at all. Yeah, it was people who were really like hyper focused on their body, on their performance. And I think I just kind of got grouped in with people who are really seeking diet culture, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so as like a way to fit in socially, I just sort of joined in that. And I think that was a part of ADHD as well, right? Like always kind of feeling like the weirdo and not fitting in 100%. So I think like to guarantee that I was accepted, I really just sort of like dove in to that culture. Yeah.
That makes sense. You know, I think that happens to kids learn as well. Like, oh,
yeah,
not okay to like your legs, or, you know, it's like they, yeah. that Mean Girls movie where they, do you ever see that scene where they, the girl had no idea what they were talking about? They were all talking about their least favorite parts, and she was like, had no idea how to join in. And then, you pick something.
Yeah, I never actually really thought about that, but that feels very similar to my experience where I was just sort of like playing or performing, the body hatred, which is really sad in retrospect. So it led to further restriction, and then of course because I was playing sports, I was using my brain a lot, I was always on the go, I needed a lot of foods, so then I would end up binging in the evenings,
of course.
And then to kind of manage emotion turned into like restrict, binge, purge cycle, which just felt totally out of control. And so I ended up getting a lot of support in college. I worked with an outpatient team. They used to be Be Nourished, now they're the Center for Body Trust. Okay. They're incredible dietitian and therapist, and really helped me heal my relationship with food through like a health at every size, intuitive eating approach. So again, very lucky that I got exposed to that immediately.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, so that working with them and kind of learning those approaches, learning that framework made the difference then.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes. Like in my relationship with food, right? Like I felt like I could let go of the diet culture stuff. I could let go of the food rules. I could feel neutral about my body. And so things felt really great for a while. And then I went to grad school, and grad school was really hard, like way harder than I ever could have imagined. I took on way too much. I decided to go to school to be a dietitian and a therapist at the same time, which
that sounds like my people.
Yes, you all know I want all the things. So that took its toll, and I ended up kind of back in that like restrict binge cycle, and couldn't figure out why. I was like, man, like I've done this work. Like I don't feel like I'm restricting myself. You know, I have freedom with food. What is happening? And that's when I really realized like, oh, this is a problem of like executive function. And I had gotten my ADHD diagnosis like right before grad school, and kind of began to understand what was going on in my brain. And I was like, oh, I'm like actually not putting food in my fridge, and I'm not thinking through meals. And so of course I'm in this cycle.
Recognizing that with executive functioning was a big aha, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so unexpected, and really cool. And I guess I didn't think or realize at the time that other people would have that experience. And so I just kind of continued on the path of like, I'm going to work with eating disorders. I do health at every size. Like, this is great. And then fast forward to I graduated, I started working at an eating disorder treatment center. And I started to see a lot of the same patterns in many of the clients who seemed like they had ADHD or like came in knowing that they were neurodivergent. And so that's when I kind of put the puzzle pieces together, and was like, wow, like these people are drowning in eating disorder treatment. Like they're not doing well, or they leave, they're doing well, they leave, and then they totally fall apart. And so that's kind of when I was like, okay, I think I can put this all together. I think there's something here, and that's when I really like focused my work on ADHD and eating disorders, and it's really evolved, and that is the majority of the clients that I work with, and I love it.
That's amazing. And so if somebody is thinking about, doing that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts for them? Advice for somebody who's realized, mm-hmm. hey, ADHD, eating disorder, interplay here, where do I begin?
Yeah. I mean, I really think understanding how our brains work is really the first step. And I think that's one of the like downfalls in treatment is that we're working on like all of these skills for how to feed yourself. But if you don't understand like why you can't feed yourself first, none of that's going to translate. So I definitely encourage people to like really dive into the literature and maybe work with a coach and connect in groups and really understand like the why of what's going on for them,
mm-hmm.
and then really lean into the healing their relationship with food. And that's kind of what I've seen with clients who come in and they're like, I think I have ADHD, or I just got diagnosed with ADHD. Let's do this.
I could definitely see how you just need both so much. Like it's really, in my opinion, it was really hard to learn intuitive eating as somebody with ADHD because I felt like I wasn't doing it right. It's like, well, setting a timer to eat, like I just, that seems super intuitive, right? Like there was some blend that I had to come up with that made sense for me that I thought was like the wrong way to do intuitive eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I hear that so much, right? People are like, oh, I started intuitive eating and like it wasn't working or I wasn't doing it right. And so there must be something wrong with me. Or like this doesn't quote unquote like work for ADHD. And to a point, I agree, like intuitive eating, classic intuitive eating as it's presented does not always work for someone with ADHD.
Right.
There are pieces of it, right, that we can modify to make it work.
Would you mind talking a little bit more about that? Because I'm assuming some people will have really no idea why that is, why what we're talking about is true for a lot of people with ADHD.
So definitely thinking about like the interoceptive awareness piece, right? A big part of intuitive eating is like being aware of and honoring hunger. So that's like being able to even notice when hunger is showing up in the first place.
Right.
And then feeling fullness is one of the other principles. And these are two things that ADHDers often struggle with or are just like have no awareness of hunger and fullness,
mm-hmm.
whether it's because of medication or just like uncontrolled ADHD, mm-hmm. right? Like whether it's being controlled or not,
right?
There are a lot of factors. Yeah. So being able to figure out external cues to then be able to check in with our bodies, because we're not going to cue ourselves often to check in. And that can feel like you're like, quote, cheating at intuitive eating or not doing it right, when really like you're setting yourself up to do it.
Because you kind of like that whole idea of like, I mean, it's one of the things I heard at the very beginning about intuitive eating is like, well, you're not eating according to the clock. You're not, you're eating according to your signals. And your point is the point to make. Like if you're not catching those signals, tuning into those signals, taking time to connect with those signals, then what would you recommend then for that aspect of ADHD?
So that is something where like timers can come in handy for some people, right? Some of us also have like 150 timers that go off a day, and that's not helpful.
I always say use them really sparingly because you know you won't like pay attention more than a couple.
And there are other kind of alternatives to timers. Like I have people, I have a client with an Apple Watch, and it just like buzzes every couple hours as kind of a physical reminder to check in. Oftentimes like accountability, right? So like setting up lunch with a coworker, like I'm going to meet you in the staff room every day at lunch. If I'm not there, come get me, right? Or shoot me a text. So having kind of those external reminders to eat, and then when you're reminded to eat, you can really check in with, okay, how hungry am I? Being able to like actually pause and slow down. We are actually very aware of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We have kind of that almost hyper awareness. Once we are tuned in, I think ADHDers can be very perceptive of their hunger and fullness.
Definitely. And one thing that I know is true for me is probably true for a lot of people is it, if I am using medication, that changes what hunger feels like. That mm-hmm. might be
brain fog and lightheaded. You know, it is a different feel to me that's not the same.
Yeah, it's not always just like rumbling in your stomach or salivating or it's actually often like ADHD symptoms.
Absolutely. When I get really foggy, it's like, oh,
what is it? So rather than like feeling like, oh, I need, you know, more medication, or I need like a midday kind of bump of medication, actually might be that you just need food.
Now, one thing I know you probably get a lot of, and I'm really curious to hear your opinion on this, is that in terms of ADHD and eating for kind of brain fuel or energy fuel, are there certain things that people do better leaning towards? I know that that may be variable, but what are your thoughts?
So definitely like that gentle nutrition piece of intuitive eating can be really helpful. I think diet culture really pushes protein as, you know, sort of the golden nutrient.
Can I stop you one second? Because I know gentle nutrition might be a new word for people or a new concept, and I'd love to hear you explain it.
So gentle nutrition is kind of like towards the end of the intuitive eating process, after you've really done the work to like unlearn food rules, unlearn a lot of that diet culture talk, connect with your body, do all that. Then we can really talk about like how do you feed yourself in a way that like both feels good and is supportive of your body and your unique and particular needs. And sort of thinking about like informed consent, right? Like if you understand that a certain food doesn't make you feel great, being able to choose to eat that food if you want, but also not eat that food if you don't want.
Right. Yeah. Because I do think it's very hard to untangle that morality with food choices. There's just, I mean, it's everywhere. You're surrounded with it. Most of us grew up kind of inundated with that. And, you know, where a food not agreeing with you is not a moral failure, but maybe you don't want to keep eating that food, right?
And even discovering like what food, maybe like combinations feel really good. And that can be hard for ADHDers, where it's easier to grab, right, like a box of crackers and just eat that for lunch. And like carbohydrates are great. They are the number one fuel source for our brain. They're really easy to absorb, which is why we tend to go to them. But they're not going to last very long if we're not eating that with protein or fat and some kind of fiber.
So that combination is kind of strategic, probably for people who might be eating again frequently or remember to eat or be in a position to have another snack or whatever.
Definitely. And for people who maybe find themselves like binging on carbohydrates, sugar, high fat foods in the evening, often just having more of those like nutritionally kind of balanced meals and snacks throughout the day alleviates a lot of that.
You mentioned something about diet culture and the love affair with protein, and I just would love to hear more what you see in your work, what you know from your practice.
I mean, if you think back like kind of diet history, right, fat has been demonized in like the 80s and 90s. It was all low fat foods, avoid
fat, avoid
cholesterol.
Those were the
worst. Food didn't taste good. We ate a lot
chips
of cardboard.
That have, like tragic blowouts. It was horrible. It's a horrible season.
And then we realized like, oh, like fat is actually really important for your body. So let's make carbohydrates bad. And so now we're kind of in that stage of like, you know, carbs are evil. Carbs, you should avoid them. They're addictive, which is not true. But again, like that's one of the macronutrients that our body needs, and there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah. And so then protein is really like the only one that hasn't been kind of, I don't know, seen as like the bad nutrient, and has been kind of touted as something that's going to like help with weight loss and help with performance and all of these different things. But really like protein is just like one piece of the puzzle. And if you're not eating it with these other foods, it's not going to do you much good.
One of the things that struck me, that I heard a talk from Russell Barkley, who was talking about executive functioning skills and like these skills getting tapped out, and that one of the ways to help is like sip something sweet or, you know, and I thought, oh, that's like so, you know, there's so many people that would cringe at that suggestion, but purely from an executive functioning standpoint, that makes sense.
Absolutely. We need, again, like we need carbohydrate, and like protein often is really hard to make or to get. It requires a lot more work. So finding really easy sources of protein and knowing that your body doesn't actually need that much protein, or as much as maybe we're taught, and that too much protein is actually really hard on your kidneys. And
That
so,
makes sense, right?
yeah.
So, yeah.
Most people are probably getting enough. ADHDers probably not. But we don't need to overdo it.
What's your advice on people that find themselves craving lots of carbs?
So that's where we'd really assess, like, are you eating consistently, right? Are you getting food in your body every 3 to 4 hours, 4 hours maximum? Are you eating enough when you are eating? Are you getting a variety of foods, or maybe are you like just eating protein all day? Then of course you're going to crave carbs. And then the other piece is like, are you getting pleasure out of your food? Because carbohydrates tend to be really pleasurable. They're really enjoyable, right? They're sweet. They tend to be crunchy, and they give us that quick boost of energy. So I would help people really assess, like, are those food needs being met? And if so, then maybe there's some other stuff to explore around, right? Like the dopamine seeking, the stimming. But I would say 99.9% of the time, it's really a matter of the food needs not being met, and that's
Yeah,
why
when you
people are
said 3 to 4 hours,
craving
I'm like, well,
carbs.
that's
Yes, it's hard.
it's hard. And 3 to 4 hours, because that's ideal for human brains, or that's best for ADHD or a little of both?
For people in general, that's like about how long it takes for us to use our energy source. That's kind of like when we need to refuel the tank.
That's a shift, I think,
Absolutely. And like, I'm guilty of it, right? Like, I'll notice all of a sudden at 2 o'clock, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, give me anything that's in my cabinet. And if I think back, I'm like, oh, I totally missed lunch today, of course. And so, I think one of the big pieces for ADHDers and folks in general to work on is like the shame and the guilt and the frustration that comes with doing things that diet culture would deem as bad, right? Or as failures, like eating a bunch of carbs rather than being like, oh, I shouldn't do that, never again, what's wrong with me? Getting curious and compassionate, right? Like, oh my gosh, of course. Like, I didn't eat lunch today, or my lunch was really boring. Like, I had a bar and it sucked. So, like, of
Oh,
course now
boring
I
lunch.
want
That's true.
something
I
delicious.
appreciate you talking about just that aspect of of enjoying food, because that's something that does not seem to be a priority. I would say culturally, a lot of times, at least in the US at this phase of, where we are right now. I'm sure it's not true universally, but I don't think food for pleasure is almost kind of frowned on. Like, oh.
Like you're doing something wrong. You're being tempted, or it's a really big problem, but it's important. And especially for ADHDers, where like our reward pathway requires more dopamine than most people, and so getting pleasure from food can actually activate that reward pathway, and that's not a bad thing, right? Like, that is one of the ways we can create dopamine, and that's awesome. The curiosity and the compassion, I think, are the things that I just come back to again and again and again.
Maybe there's a reason I was following you. Curiosity and
And
compassion, like that's
yes,
it, right? Like that
right.
is, there's this comes up all the time with coaching, just in general ADHD coaching. It's like, and all of this detail about strategies and tips, and it honestly, so much the bulk of the work is like curiosity and self-compassion.
And like, you can have all the tools in the world, right? But if you're just like, oh, like, and this is never gonna work, I can't do this, I'm broken, you're not gonna be able to like access any of those tools. So building that awareness, and then being able to say, like, okay, like, what went wrong here? What didn't go as great as I hoped, and how can I use that to set myself up for success next time, right? Maybe that's like having my lunch on my desk.
Least something about like the visual aspect of food that I almost feel people with ADHD are maybe even more drawn or responsive to that. And so it's like out of sight, out of mind, but also the positive, if it is in sight, you might every 3 hours, then you might consume more.
Yes, exactly. And that goes against everything diet culture has taught us, right? It's like hide things in the cabinet, lock them away, don't have it around. And that does not, that doesn't do anyone any good.
It doesn't. And I think that this is like kind of shared ground here with both eating disorders and ADHD is this erosion of self-trust. And diet culture does a doozy with that one, right? Like you cannot trust your own appetites, but also an experience with ADHD can do that. Like, how am I going to show up? Am I going to show up? Building that self-trust is a big piece, I'm sure.
It's so like there's a piece of like unlearning diet culture, right? But then also like unlearning ableism or unlearning kind of this neurotypical way of existing in the world, and those have to happen simultaneously.
Right.
And that's one of the big missing pieces in eating disorder treatment is addressing, like how is the world not set up for your brain?
And doing it differently. And what are some ways that you do have people do it differently? You mentioned a lot of them, right? But like some things that might be not so typical that work for some of your clients.
One that comes up again and again is the idea of like mindful eating. I have clients who are like, oh, like I'm trying to eat more mindfully. I'm really working on this and I'll do it for like a day and then I forget about it.
Oh, I get that.
And
And I understand just, that.
Right? Like I don't necessarily eat mindfully all of the time. And that's because like my brain doesn't want to eat mindfully, and that's okay, right? Mindful eating is sort of this neurotypical approach to eating and connecting with your body, and ADHDers actually need additional stimulation in order to get things done. So when I tell a client like maybe it's okay to like watch an episode of The Office while you eat lunch, right? Like their jaw will drop and they're like, right, what? Yes, like I'm allowed to like not pay attention to my eating. And so then we talk about, right, like how can you set yourself up so that you can do a little bit of both, right? Before putting on the episode, being able to check in, notice how hungry you are. And then maybe, you know, after the 20-minute episode, that's like a perfect amount of time to then, there's a natural pause and a reminder to then check in. Like, how full am I? How is this food tasting? Like, do I need anything else? So really like using what your brain does and kind of almost like taking advantage, right?
I like that.
How our brain works.
Right?
Yeah, I like that.
And I think that all or nothing, right? That cognitive kind of inflexibility, that's a piece of ADHD. Clearly it's a piece of eating disorders, right? That is a huge thing to push against.
Yeah. The rigidity shows up double time.
Yeah. Right. So that's probably just you're blowing people's minds with the office and your lunch.
Yes. Yeah. I think you always use it thing like the both and, right? Like both things can be true at the same time. Yes. Like you can eat mindfully and not mindfully.
Are you sure though, Alita? Are you sure? For real?
Yes. And you'll be okay.
I love it.
If you watch 4 episodes of The Office in a row and you don't stop, like that's okay too, right?
I love it. I hope people feel like a little exhale listening to that, right?
I hope so too.
There could be some different ways to do this.
And like you said, like we're not talking about it enough. It's not coming up enough.
No, that's what I was asking you before, because this is just like this was something I never heard about in the ADHD world. Now I'm hearing about it some, but really not that much for the correlation that we know is there. Why is that? Are we just kind of lagging here? What's up?
Yeah. I mean, I think because ADHD for so long was seen as, you know, something that is really prominent, like in children, really prominent in like cis male individuals.
Right.
And then eating disorders were, you know, focused on as like young cis female adults and young adults, that those two, like the research never really overlapped. And I think now that there is a lot more understanding of ADHD showing up across all populations and eating disorders showing up across all populations, there's more opportunity to make those connections and to see what's happening. And I actually, have some of the numbers here, but like 30% of folks with ADHD also have an eating disorder, and ADHDers are four times as likely to develop an eating disorder. And then folks with an eating disorder are 2.5 times more likely to also have ADHD. So undiagnosis, right?
Yeah.
They're probably a lot bigger for people who don't have access to diagnosis or getting that.
So yeah, I'm sure the numbers are higher. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, it's scary. And also I think really great that we're starting to recognize this, because it's creating more access to care, to quality care, on both sides of it, both for eating disorders and for
right. Right.
Yeah.
So this is your work. You're right in the cross section of a lot of this. So I know people will want to know what you have going on, want to get in touch with you. Let us know what you're doing and how they can.
Yeah, definitely. So I have a group program that I've been offering for a couple of years, and I'm sort of reworking it into kind of like a monthly membership so that it's a little more accessible. There's like some different affordable options.
Okay.
So I'm going to be out of town in January, but in February, I'm hoping to kind of relaunch that reworked group program.
Awesome.
There's a way to get on the wait list so that you get updates through my website. Yeah. And then we've been doing like monthly webinars. I have a couple of dietitians who work for me, both neurodivergent. And so we're doing like a meal planning with ADHD workshop in January.
Awesome.
And we're hoping to do more of those. And they're really inexpensive. They're really fun.
I know the meal planning one, like that one comes up all the time, all the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And we don't tell people, like, you know, do the like Pinterest meal planning.
Making freezer meals.
Yes, where meals go to die.
Right? It all looks the same when it's frozen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And we're taking new clients. We work with people individually, and as dietitians, we can work in a lot of different states. So folks are interested in getting some one-on-one support.
Awesome. So what was your website again? I will have the link, but just
wiseheartnutrition.com.
Okay, perfect. Yep. That will all be in the show notes. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Loved hearing what you had to share with us. It was great, and I know it's going to be very helpful.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's fantastic finally connecting.
Oh my, I didn't record, did I?
No, you did.
Oh, thank God. I see recording. I didn't see it lit up.
Oh my gosh.